You're listening to WCOM, broadcasting from the Art Center in Carrboro. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Now more of Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
And again, we have Drew Becker, poet, author, publisher, on with us. Also Rocco and Will Williams here in the studio. Back over to you. I want to ask you about Ginsberg. I think you're going to read a little intro and then explain to us how you got a hold of Allen Ginsberg and managed to interview the man.
Yeah. Let me just read a little bit of this. I wrote an article for the Denver Post, and this was for something called Poets Day that we did in 1979.
Okay.
And I had the honor of being able to go interview Ginsberg. A quiet, unassuming Allen Ginsberg sat finishing his lunch. Once the interview was underway, this surprising poet, working on the anti-nuclear demonstration at Rocky Flats, beamed with joy at recalling earlier experiences with Neil Cassidy, his Denver connection from some 30 years ago. And I'll talk about Cassidy a little bit later.
That's fine.
About that. But what I think is really interesting here is Ginsberg indeed was an influence on me. And when I was at the University of Colorado, I saw him a number of times read on campus because he was in the area a lot.
Right.
But he always seemed to stand up for the people who didn't have anybody to stand up for them. And I always respected that about him. He was, you know, led a lot of the anti-war kind of
things. He was much admired. I do know that, yeah.
Right, exactly.
He was also an early influence on Bob Dylan.
He was, indeed. And a number of other people in terms mm-hmm. of...
As was Dylan Thomas, which is where Bob Dylan got his name.
Exactly. So when I think of Ginsberg, one of the things that I don't write very much anymore, but I did write a bit of protest poetry for a while, I found that the polemic of writing that kind of thing detracted from the work. So...
Explain that.
Well, to me, I think that art has to push boundaries.
Mm-hmm,
so in some cases, I think it's okay to talk about contemporary issues and things that are going on in the world around us. And in fact, I do write poetry, some poetry about that. But for the most part, I find that there's so much negative in the news.
Oh, God, yeah.
That the arts can offset it. Not by burying our heads, but by showing the wonder of the rest of the world and trying to promote the better part of humanity.
A more positive aspect, yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Me. Yeah, exactly. So even though I do write some protest poetry, most of what I publish, I try to make it inspirational because I think we're living in tough times.
We need a positive note. And there is a way of looking at what's going on and still squeezing something positive out of it. I'm with you on that, too. I'm gonna have fun until I die, no matter what the heck crumbles around me.
Exactly. And so I like to reflect that in most of the poetry I write. But I think that there's room for poetry to make statements about things that are happening around us.
Referring to Neil Cassidy, I noticed the title of your piece on Ginsberg is Cassidy was, quote, unquote, light of mind to Ginsberg. And this is a special you wrote for the Denver Post.
Yeah, it was a really exciting interview.
No doubt. How did you land it, first of all?
Well, we were putting together something called Poets Day, which was Denver's most obscure poets is what we called it. We had it down at Civic Center. We got a permit to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We got a couple kegs of beer and had people come down from Naropa, which I'll talk about in a minute, with Ginsberg. But it was dedicated to Cassidy, who grew up in Denver and was in the... he grew up in the bars.
The reason I asked that question, too, is because you're talking about Colorado. And most of us, when we think about Ginsberg, we're thinking about East Village or New York.
That's right. Later, Ginsberg did set up something called Naropa in Boulder, Colorado, which was a Buddhist study
interesting
area. And above it, he had a on the second floor, there was an area that he dedicated to poets who came in to study with him called the
don't wreck your brain because I can't help it.
Well, anyway, it was something about disembodied poetics.
Ah, okay.
Okay. And these were poets that came from all over the country to meet Ginsberg and Orlovsky, who also is a poet.
It was probably sort of an open mic type thing, I would imagine.
It did, yeah. It was. And these poets were upstairs, and everything was very reverent downstairs with the Buddhists.
Mm-hmm.
And the poets were usually out of control. The one time we went to Boulder, we met one of the poets, and he as we were leaving, he tripped down and fell down like two sets of stairs and got up, and he didn't feel a thing. So that's where he was before we went to start drinking.
Okay. Right, okay.
So, but to get back to Cassidy again.
So if anybody got a little too tense, you can always say, okay, you to the Buddhist.
To the Buddhist, yeah, downstairs.
Right.
So what Ginsberg liked about Cassidy is that he came to Denver. He came out when Kerouac wrote On the Road.
Right, okay.
There's a whole section about
that is pretty
to
much
Denver.
The slice of time we're talking about here.
Right, exactly. 1952, 1953, mm-hmm. something like that. In fact, Ginsberg first came to Denver in 1947. And
okay.
He was working at a big department
store. So was this his second home, or what was the deal in Denver?
I think it was. I mean, I think that, you know, he there was only so much in New York he could take.
Oh, I can fully understand that. Yeah, you got to leave the planet once in a while.
So, yeah, so he would come out to probably for a little bit of relaxation, although I don't know how mm-hmm. how much relaxation there really was, because he was a high-powered kind of guy.
Probably
although you'd
so.
Never know it. When I interviewed him, I walked in, he was the most unassuming man that I'd ever seen. He was sitting there on a mattress without sheets, okay, eating lunch, okay, and what he was eating for lunch was scrambled eggs and green peas.
Okay.
It was like, and I looked around the place, and there was almost no furniture, but there were books everywhere.
This was his home.
This was his home in
okay,
Boulder.
Okay, okay, okay.
Yeah, in Boulder. So,
so is this to say that he was a vegetarian, or do we even know that anything about him?
I don't know. He might well have been at
he
the
may
time.
Have,
I
yeah.
don't remember.
Doesn't sound like a filling meal.
No, it did. I don't know.
Just wondering.
It probably wasn't. It definitely wasn't gourmet, I can tell
right,
you that.
Right, right.
But what he loved about Cassidy. Well, let me read a little bit from the article of some things that he told me.
Go
about
ahead.
Cassidy.
This is the article you wrote.
This is the article I
okay.
wrote. He says that Cassidy had been sitting at the Denver Public Library reading Immanuel Kant and ran into Al Chase, who was returning from Columbia, and that's Columbia University in New York. Chase told Neil poetry was superior to philosophy, Ginsberg recalled. And a little light bulb went off inside of Neil's head. He said, of course. And he came to Columbia in 1946 to find Jack and myself to find out how to write poetry. Although Cassidy is most famous for his heroics, Ginsberg spoke of his intellect. Cassidy's intellectual abilities were extraordinary. He amazed Kerouac and myself and later Ken Kesey so that he became the central hero in Kesey's book, Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. Kesey called him Kind King, Light of Mind. His intelligence lay in his recognition of the dimensions of the mind, very similar to the Buddhist phenomena of mind. He was interested in discrimination between thought forms, gaps between thought forms, and the levels of thought. He would simultaneously recollect 5 to 6 thoughts back, and so weave them into his conversation with some puns or references to some notion, or 6 thoughts back, and I'm sorry, or a phrase from a previous moment. In those days, he was talking about 7 levels of thought, not a schematic thing, just a simultaneous occurrence. And what the way that Cassidy would demonstrate this is Ginsberg told me they went into a pool hall one day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting at a table, and Cassidy looks and starts to tell the story, make up a story for each of the players at the pool table. This guy's wife left him 3 days ago. He's been living with his buddy on a sleeping bag. He eats this. Here's what he does. Here's what he wants to do. He has no job. Blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Then
you
go to the next guy.
Sets each character up.
And set up
okay.
each one of these characters spontaneously. And then do interactions between the characters before they got to the pool hall to have the game. And so this delighted Ginsberg.
And did they actually play along with this? I guess they did.
The
characters that he set up.
Oh, they didn't even know.
Oh, they didn't know.
He would just narrate this.
I got you.
Okay?
Okay.
Out of his mind, he would do narrations of things that were going on around him and be able to pull all these things together.
Impromptu, so to speak, yeah.
Exactly. And again, he would pull things in. He'd talk about something at the beginning, and by the time he got to talking about the third person, he would pull that back in.
And what was the point he was making with all this?
That everything was connected.
Mm-hmm.
That there were connections beyond anything that we could even begin to realize. And this is the multidimensional kind of Buddhist thought that he was talking about.
Right, okay. So. And obviously this had some appeal to you. Did it influence your own writing style? Did you draw something from this that had you experiment with this kind of genre?
You know, I know you're a writer as well.
Mm-hmm.
Being a writer, we move between different
absolutely whatever intrigues at the moment to see what we can build on and flow with. Yeah.
Right, not only topics, but we realize the simultaneity of what's going on.
Yeah.
At the time that we're writing about one thing, something else is going on in our lives, okay? And we tend to pull all that together. I mean, Will, you're a filmmaker, so film does the same thing. Any artist has to pull together all these different pieces and put them in a compact kind of casing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we're going day to day, we don't think about that. We're usually fairly linear in the way that we're thinking. But I think as a writer, I always have to be aware that it's not linear.
And the suggestion was that poetry could capture this.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's and for me that was the way that I could capture that.
Gotcha.
And that was the world that I want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to live in a linear world where I go out and go to work. I've done that.
I don't think we actually do, whether we realize it or not, especially in this day and time. But we're going to go to a little more music. I'll come back and pick your brain a little more.